Welcome to episode 60, the big 60 of the Mini PC Show, and they said we couldn't do it. Dor, how the heck are you? And you're looking good today.
I'm feeling tired, exhausted, but okay. I'm not going to say bad.
Well, Dor's shrinking away to nothing. I'm doing wonderful in beautiful Green Bay here, and we got a lightning storm going on.
So you're surrounded by cheeseheads?
Yes, I am, and I'm not too far from the stadium. And Brian,
oh, that ain't bad.
How the heck are you doing? You're in beautiful Massachusetts, correct?
That's right. Just getting over a tropical storm that was a hurricane at one point, but ended up fizzling out. And things are pretty good.
Yeah, we have really that good. Chain reaction tropical storm / hurricane, and only one hit my neighborhood, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Nice. That is good.
Which I rushed the flock home last week so I could get that hurricane experience. Really, so I could hang the shutters on the darn house. But we did okay. The worst was we're out of power for 31 hours. So, like the second day of no AC was kind of rough. But
right. Well, really quick, if I understand correctly, you were not able to get a generator before, but you said Tracy Holtz helped. And I don't want to say help explain to you to rig something up, but he told you about a solution that you could do.
Okay. So, we were townhouse dwellers renting a place for a while in Florida, and like about almost 4 years ago, we bought the house. The first time we had a hurricane experience, and I live in Palm Beach County, but I live in the redneck part, which is Jupiter Farms. And the first time there was a hurricane, out in the Caribbean, I ran to Home Depot, and there wasn't a generator to be found. So I talked to Tracy Holtz, host of, Sports Nuts and Book Nuts, right?
Yes, sir.
And all-around good guy, one of my favorite people to chat with, other than Dor. So I don't even get a reaction out of Dor when I do that.
Yeah, because Tracy's a better man than wow.
He is, but I don't want to say that in front of you. So, all right, now I got a reaction. So Tracy said, okay, on Amazon, order an inverter. So I have an inverter. It does 2,000 watts continuous, 4,000 watts peak, for a short period of time. And what I do, my original plan was my wife had the VW Jetta, which is a diesel, and diesel stores forever. You don't have to do anything to diesel to store it. And the diesel vehicles are just crazy efficient. So because there's more BTUs in a gallon of diesel or per pound of diesel than there is in gasoline. And so the plan was just you clamp that on the battery terminals and you leave it running. And that will power the refrigerators. Tracy also told me if you're not opening and closing your refrigerators, you really only have to power them for about an hour every 8 hours. So three times a day or thereabouts, if you just power your refrigerators, everything will stay frozen, everything will stay cold. The backup plan to that is in my freezers on the fridge, I have a couple of gallon bottles of water or gallon jugs of water that if the power does go out, I would take them out and put them in the refrigerator to keep the refrigerator cold. But that worked fine. So while we're out of power, we also have a well, and I filled up the tubs, and I put a thin plastic drop cloth in there that I throw away. It's only a buck or two, but it keeps the water from leaking out. Along with that, I forget the precise measurement. Look it up. Don't take my word for it. But you put X drops of bleach per gallon in the water to keep it from, growing stuff. So the water's still drinkable and all that bit. But pretty much we just used it to flush the toilets. So the only thing we're really out of, because everybody downloaded media from, I'm running Plex on the Odroid XU4. So everybody downloaded their movies to watch, TV shows to watch, and stuff like that. We could charge our phones, we could charge our laptops. So the only negative was day two, we had no AC and the house was warming up. And, it's like mid-80s, high 80s out and very high humidity. So that was starting to get uncomfortable. The other odd thing was we had cell coverage and I did a redneck weather report. So it's not on flyingrich.com, but I'll see about putting it there. I'm out in shop garbage bag doing a weather report, the wind and rain. But the cell coverage day two, the day after the storm, it said emergency only. So I don't know if they had generators or fuel, generator backup power at the cell towers, and they ran out of fuel for them. But the cell coverage in my neighborhood, mm-hmm. which is more rural, was pretty bad. Even though I'm, you know, several thousand feet away from a cell tower, which, you know, crazy close to one. We drove into town and we found one of the public supermarkets. And I asked the guys, they have power. They have 16 days worth of fuel on their generator.
Hmm.
So all of the public supermarkets in Florida are like really well set up. And not to like kiss butt on Publix, but they are absolutely, I've been all over the country, my favorite supermarket. The people are so nice. They say hello to you. They mean it. You know, it's really a good place. And the one I was at, they let people, they had, you know how they have a deli section and they had some tables? Well, they had a couple of outlets there and people were charging their cell phones. So they also had Wi-Fi. So whether you needed Wi-Fi or cell phone coverage, even there, though the cell phone coverage was better in that neighborhood, it was, I still didn't have a call complete, you know, end to end. It's like, okay, it might cut out and it goes. But that was the worst of it for us in Palm Beach.
Wow.
Gotcha. So I'm going to guess hypothetically, with only having to start the car, I'm going to guess 1 hour for every 8 hours. You could have really went days.
Oh, absolutely.
On a one tank of gas.
Also, now here's Alan from the Linux Link Tech Show has a Prius, and my wife now has the Hyundai Sonata Hybrid. And what Alan said, so the Prius and the Hyundai, if I have it right, both have the electric vehicle battery and a regular battery for the gasoline engine, the internal combustion engine.
Mm-hmm.
So I could clamp on, at least Alan said this works with his Prius. If he puts it in the run position, which doesn't necessarily start the engine, clamps onto the battery, it detects the voltage of the battery going down, and then it'll start, run the engine, charge the battery up, and shut down when it's charged.
That's right. Yeah, that's pretty, I do that all the time. Well, I don't do that, but when I run my hybrid, mm-hmm. it'll shut down when I'm idle. And then, you know, when I have my radio running for too long or AC or whatever, the engine will kick over to charge the battery just like that.
Right.
That's pretty ingenious.
I didn't try that with the Sonata because my wife was like, no, use your truck. I'm like, okay, no problem. You know. Plus, I had all of the vehicles were full. I had 2 14-gallon gas cans full, so that's 28 gallons. I had another 3 5-gallon cans full. So I was real certain that I was going to outlive everybody in my neighborhood. I'm teasing.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys are prepared.
So for the most part, the only thing I lacked going into this, I wasn't the crazy man running into the supermarket, blah, because when my daughter got out of school for summer break, I had her grab the hurricane kit, write the dates on everything, and write a list of what was old that we had to replace. So, you know, so you have dried food like rice or pasta, you have pasta sauce, soup, any canned fruit or any can, basically anything in a can or anything dry is great hurricane food and usually stores for a fair amount of time. And the whole idea, it's kind of like anybody telling you about investing. This is also investing. It's investing in your survival. That just like dollar cost averaging, you could once a week buy a can of tuna fish and throw it in a container that you have for your, you know, whatever survival food. And, you know, Florida, we lose power when you have a hurricane, that kind of thing. Other states, you might have a blizzard and it takes down your phone line, power lines. So, yeah, you got to have something that I'm good for a week, 2 weeks, a month, whatever, off the grid.
Right. So here's my question. I'm going to guess the only thing you guys really suffered from, and I don't want to, you know, lighten it, but is like running out of power for devices.
Well, no, we had power for devices. Really, the two things that we suffered from that our life wasn't normal was AC and running water. So we couldn't take a shower. So you could take, gotcha. You know, a sponge bath. So along with that, so I ran both refrigerators and I put a power splitter in there so we could charge up, you know, laptops, devices, etc., and run them.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. And I also had... there's one more thing I got to check to validate that this is the fact, but I had a couple of UPSs and I can power my modem and my router. So even if we lost power, I could have also powered those, but there's a distribution amp before the, modem. And I'm not sure if that DA passes signal if it's not powered. So I might've had to have powered that also. But otherwise, you know, we would have had internet if that was the case.
Gotcha.
I gotcha.
Very cool, very cool. I will just hint that I might have Tracy on one or more episodes of DDG doing, because here's the big thing I want to let people know, because people get triggered by all kinds of stuff these days. Rich clearly said prepared, not prepper. To me, there's a very big difference. People who prepare just prepare because bad things can happen. Preppers are the ones that literally have like $20,000 worth of food in their basement for things, which, you know, that takes a lot of dedication and a lot of money. But anybody can just prepare for, you know, emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and there's different ways to prepare for emergencies. And I, you know, wave your hands if I talk too much about this. But the other thing, and I talked to a buddy of mine, and this came into even many things ran out quick. So people were out of fuel. You know what? I got fuel 2 weeks before there was a fuel shortage. I had all of my vehicles filled up. I had all of the gas cans filled up. 2 weeks, you know, when I knew there was a storm and it was projected to come our way, right. I filled up. There was no shortage of gasoline at that time. So you should continuously be prepared. The other thing, and now I've lost my train of thought.
Well, and you don't want to forget toilet paper.
And you have plenty of ammo. So that's
I have
toilet paper and ammo.
For each caliber.
Nice. But,
I know what I was going to say. So there's these guys, and I, you know, because I'm a Second Amendment kind of guy, I'll hang out at the gun shop or whatever and shoot the breeze. I hear stories about guys that have these bug out bunkers, you know, underground. And so the guy lives in Florida, but he's got a bug out bunker in North Carolina. I'm like, great, you got an Apache helicopter that's going to take you there?
Yeah. Because the roads are going to be used.
Yeah, they are.
And that was the situation. So I flew from Green Bay back to Florida to hang the hurricane shutters on the house. In Wednesday of last week, or 2 weeks ago, sorry, the hurricane path was 3 blocks east of my house. I'm like, well, if that's the case, I'm not driving north on I-95 to get out of town because that's going to be bumper to bumper. I'm going to go over towards Tampa. And then after I got the hurricane shutters up and I look, the storm is going to go up the West Coast. So we missed, you know, the worst part of it.
Right. Very cool. Well, I'm happy you made it through that. Being this show, being me, my logic is then maybe we should also think, is there ways that mini PCs, mini computers can come into solutions to help these things? The obvious one to me is your small micro Raspberry Pi Zero camera, and computer and mini battery to give you at least X amount of hours of remote viewing outside, just so you don't have to open the door to see what's going on because mm-hmm. you have shutters over your windows kind of thing.
Ooh.
And if it gets completely blown away, it's less than, you know, $25.
Oh, good point. And you know what I did? I was live streaming on Facebook and I took the webcam that's normally on running Octopi so I can see what's going on my 3D printer. And I threw it out front of the house so I could see what was going on, because with the hurricane shutters up, there only the front door is hurricane glass, and that's the only thing you can see out on. So, yeah, I did want to be able to see out, and I want to show other people what was going on so we could see what's in the environment. The other thing, and thanks for mentioning it, because I was looking this up beforehand, I was looking for a mesh network solution. And I didn't find anything really good or that I was really happy with. That was part of my hurricane prep, looking through that.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I can tell you is you can buy what's called travel routers to make your own personal networks, and then you can link them up, but it's really not a true mesh network. So I don't know of any solution that's residentially feasible, because the only stuff I've ever heard about mesh networks are the hundreds of dollar small business systems kind of thing.
There's Ubiquiti obviously makes some really good mesh networking hardware, but that's mainly for commercial and or if you have some large property, they're pretty expensive. But Plume, I heard, is on the rise now. Plume makes mesh network devices that you can actually just plug into the outlets in your house, and it creates sort of a mesh network throughout your home. And I heard that was pretty good, a little bit better, actually, a lot better than the Google
mesh.
So my
attempt. Concept for a mesh network, would be, and it could be a Pi device, the really would be like BYOD, bring your own device. So it could be your phone, it could be, you could take a Pi device with a, you know, RAV power on it and put in a Ziploc bag on the corner of your property. And that all of these things would talk and form a mesh network and find a connection to the internet independently. Not not as we talk, you know, about a home network or a property network or a facility network as in a mesh network, but that it's a publicly working net, mesh network. There was a product, and apparently it's kind of moved away from what it originally was, which is Open Garden. And that was their concept. There was Fire Chat in Open Garden, and that was supposed to get you mesh networking and a chat app.
Well, I think, Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, one of your links in the show notes is the Raspberry Pi Unify, and is that not like a mesh network?
Not exactly. So this is putting the controller OS on a Raspberry Pi. So if you purchase devices from Unify, like their access points and their phones and the wireless access, outside access points, like we were just talking about for mesh networking. If you have a ton of these in your house or on your property and you need to configure them all at once or change a password, instead of logging into each individual one, you can use a controller. Now, they sell a controller, but they also provide the software free of charge as well, too. And so you can actually put this on a Raspberry Pi and pretty much control all of your devices from the Raspberry Pi. It's gotcha, okay. It's pretty cool.
I was then backwards because I did Ubiquiti Mesh search. The first thing that came up was Ubiquiti, and it was the same name, Unify.
Unify.
So I thought maybe that was it. But then when I do searches, I do see something called UNI-PI, which might be a type of mesh network available for the Raspberry Pi, but I'm not sure. And I know this is the show. This is not the time where we're supposed to do research kind of thing. Okay, real quick. We do have some emails. Do you want to go ahead and bring up the first one, Brian?
Yes, we got an email from Greg. And Greg writes in saying, I am a master's program. I'm in a master's program at Penn State, but I have very little experience in cybersecurity. I don't want to be one of those people who get out of school with a degree but no experience. And he says that he's right down the street from your door, and he's willing to buy your beer or so to pull you aside and chat with you for a little bit.
I didn't even pick up that he's down the street from me. I'm blind.
You didn't see that?
No. I'm serious. I'm studying 3 cybersecurity ministers. I'm staying... okay, well, I'll say this. I think I misread his email, okay? I will say that straight up, because I gave him a link to something called RASPWN, R-A-S-P-W-N. And I think this is actually the exact opposite of what he was asking for. Now that, I'm sorry, reading is not, you know, my strong suit, Greg. But what this is a Raspberry Pi penetration testing device. So what this is, you take the Pi, you install this, and it becomes your central point to do pen testing. And what he's asking for, it sounds like, is there an OS for the Raspberry Pi or any other SBCs that is meant as a vulnerable OS? So this is the opposite. This is like honeypot, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Right. Didn't you have a little experience with honeypots on Pis, Rich?
Was I looking at that? I'm trying to.
Yeah, think. Yeah. You did have an episode on that.
Hey, Sid, I'm drawing a blank on that.
Well, you're a drawler. I'm not really good at drawing. So we will have to do better research, I'll have to do better research and find. Because the key word, and if he's in cybersecurity, one of the key words is honeypot.
Yes.
There's another word for it in Metasploit when you have an operating system that you put out on a device specifically to, like, practice your exploit discovery and your vulnerability discovery workflow. And I can't remember what that word is. And if you listeners out there have a good idea of one of these things, please do not hesitate. Ping us. Let us know, because I'm pretty sure I'm completely wrong.
We can also, and Ocali Linux has a lot of tools as well, too.
But that's the opposite as well. He's looking for a vulnerable OS.
Oh, yeah. No, I see what you're saying.
Looking for a honeypot.
Yeah.
I think you might want to resort to Windows 95 or just Windows in general.
I'm not going to say you're wrong, Brian. Okay, so, well, I'm going to make sure that we have in the notes this Razpone, at least. This is something cool we can talk about. And we did have, I know, we did have a honeypot OS. What I will do is definitely find it, put it in the notes for this episode, but also put it in the notes so we talk about it again next episode, see if it jogs any memory circuits kind of thing. Okay. Thank you for the email, Greg. I will say he said, one of the things he said was about there are certain things he can't run on Raspberry Pi because it's a VM, because it's a Raspberry Pi. He said there's a VM available called Metasploitable, but it's a VM for x86 computers. Well, one of the links I also gave him was to Exagear Desktop, which is another thing that we talked about a couple times in the past, I'm going to say. And what this is a x86 application that allows you to emulate x86 architecture on an ARM and run applications that are meant for laptops and servers and desktop on ARM computers. So technically you could run a VMware or VirtualBox on a Raspberry Pi.
Nice.
I'm not sure of your performance or if it's acceptable or not, but I mean, that's at least part of what he was looking for.
One day one of us are going to have to break down and try that out.
Well, and it's a paid product, and I keep telling myself I'm going to break down and buy it, and every time the opportunity presents itself, I don't. So I'll blame myself for that.
Well, like,
so I'll make sure that's the link too.
Well, like you said, I don't know how well the performance is going to be. I mean, we already know what the Pi can do, and I can't imagine having a virtual session.
Well, the only plus is my logic. When you spin up a OS that is Metasploitable, quote unquote, you don't really need performance. You don't need snappiness. You don't need speed at any degree. So it might, as long as it boots, it might be acceptable enough. This is the kind of question only a security professional, aka anybody who knows more than me, will be able to tell, because I'm not positive. Very cool. Do you want to do the next email, Rich, that we got?
Sure. I'm going to read this email the way you understood the last email, Dor. It says, geez. Hello, you are now officially my favorite podcast. Thanks. Hope your show continues long into the future, and especially enjoying it since the addition of Flying Rich. That was the whole email.
Aww.
A little bit more than that.
No, actually, it's an email from Colin, and he's asking about Lineage OS, and I'll not read the parts I just read. Maybe highly off topic, but considering you mentioned Samsung range of phones regularly, and Dor, I think you were talking about that Samsung was the world's largest chip manufacturer now because they make all the chips that go into the phones or in all of the ARM processors. So I did rule. I broke rule number one of podcasting. I drank soda before the podcast. I was wondering if you will be covering Lineage OS at any future point. Now, Dor, this was the Cyanogen originally?
Exactly,
and it became Lineage?
Well, long story short, yes, yes. Okay. They got millions of dollars from Microsoft. They proclaimed they were going to bully Google and take over Android strong arm. Then they stole code from open source developers, relicensed it under a license the original developers didn't like, lost a lot of money, lost a lot of deals, tried to expand, lost more money, closed down two of their shops or two of their businesses they were trying to do, then changed names. I look at Lineage as the quarterback in the NFL who's in his 40s. There's not much time left. If you want to have modern Lineage on a device, you better do it soon. You know, if you want to go see Peyton Manning last year. You better hurry up and go see a game really soon, kind of thing. They are very near death. I'll say in the beginning, they had great ideals.
They had
great passion. They helped bring modernization to Android, because so many of the features now that are coming into Android have been in ROMs for years and years and years and years and years and years. Right now, to me, the only reason to ROM anything is because you demand on having security updates.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for 2+ year old devices, you're just not going to get it. Unless even with some Pixel Nexus devices, you can get some updates. But the real reason to ROM right now, to me, is to get the updates. And if you are worrying about the updates, because you keep seeing these articles about 4 million installs of this thing on Android, and then you turn around and you turn around and you don't hear about any actual person with any of these on their phone. So I don't know. My logic is they're not even in the United States where this is happening, because if you read any of those articles, they never seem to mention the country of origin where this stuff is happening. I will personally never install Lineage again. I will personally never bring Lineage OS to the show. I don't like their ethics. I don't like their morals. I don't like their leadership. I don't like what they did with their money. I don't like how they treated developers who submitted code. The most notable one was the camera app. If you just Google News search like a year ago. What was the original name of the company again, Rich?
CyanogenMod.
Oh, yeah, CyanogenMod.
CyanogenMod camera app, camera app code. And you'll see the story of how they basically took the guy's code. The guy went very public. He said, look, they took my code. I submitted it under this license. They changed the license. And like they're basically claiming ownership to what I wrote. And, you know, he didn't. When you donate code to these kinds of projects, it's a piece of you. And you donate it to a project with the belief that the actual license that you donated under is going to continue. And when it doesn't, it stings really bad. So I don't know. I don't even know how much support Lineage is getting from anybody else. I believe they changed their name to Lineage to try to get the newest developers to not know their past. You know, whether or not that's true, I have no idea, but that's just what I believe.
So the letter goes on to say, just flashed my Moto G 2014 LTE with Lineage OS 14.1 and no complaints at all. I use it as a mini PC, not a phone at all, no SIM, with Google Apps, and he says F-Droid instead. I'm not sure what F-Droid is. He says, reason, privacy. I live in Belfast, Northern Ireland, under UK law, and as you know, that means outside of Russia/China, the most draconian snooping laws in the Western world. For that reason, long-lived mini PCs with FOSS software and OSs and VPNs. Hope your show continues long into... Oh, that's one I said I wasn't going to read. Thanks. I will find out during the week how to donate. Your suggested preferred $1 per show. All the best. And I don't know if I mentioned it on this show, but I said, you know what? I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. And I said I'm going to give $10 worth of money on Patreon to 10 different podcasts or whatever, you know, YouTube channels that I watch. And I did that like a few weeks back.
Yeah, that's what I do. If you just go to podnuts.com, there's two links. On full desktop site, it's top towards the top right-hand side. If you're on mobile, it's down a little bit of ways, 3/4 down the page. There's two links, one to subscribe to $1 a month, one to do the bulk donation. Whatever you want to do is fine by me kind of thing. If so, support is support. I'm thankful either way. F-Droid. F-Droid is essentially Google Play, but all the code for the application that gets submitted to F-Droid has to be in like a GPL-ish kind of open state. The only warning I will give people about F-Droid, it's a real warning. Sorry, Colin. It's a real warning. Whenever you look at apps on the F-Droid, the first thing you should do is go to Google Play or Amazon and take a look at the app there too. Look at the version numbers on the app because there's a fair chance that a developer put something on F-Droid hoping just to gain traction and put it on Amazon hoping to get traction, then put it on Google Play hoping to get traction anywhere. You know, you spread yourself everywhere. And then as time goes on, you go into F-Droid and you see your download numbers are X, and then you look at Amazon, your download numbers are Y. Then you look at Google and see, well, your download numbers are Z. And what developers have a nasty habit of doing then is updating the Google Play first for a while, and then Amazon, and then F-Droid. And then after a while, they just stop updating Amazon and F-Droid. So look at the version numbers. And then go look to Google Play and look at the release notes for the app. And there are apps that just do release notes where I believe you can look at the history of apps. And then look at those apps and see if what was fixed was security related. Just because something is available on the F-Droid marketplace doesn't mean it's instinctually better or good. It just means it was written in a open format with open licensing. The same, if not worse, security exploits can be there versus Google Play or Amazon. So just because it's on F-Droid does not mean trust it. You still have to look at everything with a skeptical eye. But there are plenty of good applications out there on F-Droid. I just encourage you, double check, do your due diligence. And if you put in any kind of personal information on this device that you are using, Colin, every 6 months or so, look at those apps again and look at them in Google Play and see their version numbers. And if they're not getting updated, try to ping the developer and ask if they can send an updated version to F-Droid, because it will help everybody and it will help F-Droid.
Gotcha.
Okay, I will make sure there's a link to the F-Droid marketplace. And I will say, one of the things F-Droid tried to do, turns out they kind of can't do, is they wanted to make a operating system for devices as well. And they started to do that, but then what they quickly found out was, to adhere to true open philosophies, they could not do this on 90+ percent of all the phones being made, because every phone out there, pretty much every phone, has closed sourced binary blobs for the GPU or for the radio on the device, which means even if somebody offers you a free trusted operating system, those binary blobs could be doing whatever they want to do in the background, and you will never know, and they will never know. So the only device they ever released an operating system for, I believe, was the Nexus 5, which, if you know your history, was also the same device that Ubuntu was offering their phone OS on. And that's the reason why, because they had open drivers that they could go in, investigate, and optimize for their use.
Interesting.
Okay. You brought up the video, Brian, about the Unify.
Yes.
Now, was there any more you wanted to bring up about that video?
Other than the video is very extensive and it's pretty straightforward. It's a gentleman at YouTube. The channel is Crosstalk Solutions. And check out a few of his other posts that he has up there, too. They're very educational if anyone is network savvy and wants to deploy some voice over IP phones in the house and use your Google Voice number throughout your house instead of paying for X subscriber. And it shows you, how to set up the Raspberry Pi controller, Unify controller. It goes over Wi-Fi mesh networking, just a bunch of things. They're very detailed and quick. Some are not so quick, but some of them are.
Well, I think they're very worth watching, because to me, he's the kind of guy who obviously, and I hate saying it like this, he knows his stuff when it comes to networking, all the layers, the things to look out for in networks, how to optimize your networks, why to optimize your networks, and things like that. And you also shared another one of his videos on Google Plus Mini PC Show feed.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that video extremely eye-opening. It was the video on the Fing box.
Yes.
Which I believe we brought up here when it was a Kickstarter or Indiegogo campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about Fing? Because I think it started out as an Android app, but I'm not sure.
No, you're right. It was an Android app and used primarily for network discovery. So, you download the app and you connect to the network, and it just pings all sorts of devices that whatever is connected to your network, and it gives you a report basically with the IP addresses, with the MAC addresses, what the name is, what operating system it's running, and the app allows you to connect to it remotely if it supports that, and if the ports are open, it shows you what ports that are open and available as well too. And so what Fing decided to do was make hardware to to basically make their app a little bit more more user-friendly. And so you can actually look at the performance of the network, see who's the biggest user on the network, and you can actually shut certain devices down on the network. And what he discovered was actually one of your fears, Dor, is that, you know, kind of I don't trust it. You know, there's something about this device that I'm not really trusting about. And it turns out how they're shutting down devices on the network is that they're using some kind of a spoofing capability to do that.
Yeah. I'll say if you run an extremely tight network and you have like monitoring on your network, the split second you plug this thing up to your network, bells will go off, sirens will go off. Now, here's the thing. If you're just a normal user and you plug this up, it honestly, you might find this thing to be one of the most fantastically useful devices you've ever had in your life.
Right.
Because what it does is absolute, I don't want to say absolutely awesome, but damn, he was even blown away because as soon as he plugged in, he was like, all I did was plug this up and it's doing this. It is turning off internet to devices. It's doing discovery. It's doing, and he's like, I don't even know how the hell it's doing it. I did not give this any of the admin creds to my router, and I don't know how this is doing it. Now, as soon as he said that, I knew a little bit of how he was doing it. This is an old attack vector that used to be very popular, especially like in schools, college type areas. What he's doing is called ARP spoofing. If you've listened to Security Now over the year, ARP spoofing is one of the things that Gibson talks about at least a couple times a year. It's a very low-level way of doing basically network manipulation. What happens is you open the device on your phone and you say, okay, I want to turn off my child's tablet right now. You hit the button. What it does is it specifically sends a message to that tablet's MAC address, which is the base routing on all the internal networks. And it sends it to that address and it says, here is your gateway. And it lies to the device and says the gateway to go out to the internet is now the Thingbox device. So when the computer tries to get out to the internet, it can't because it's being blocked. So what this is doing is it's ARP spoofing to your computer, but then the gimmick is it has to do it at least, I believe he said, 3 times a second to have the spoof continue on. And he showed how sometimes packets slip through and get out. So it's continuously ARP spoofing devices. And what it's doing is it's essentially flooding your network.
Mm.
So if you're on a network that is already teetering on speed, reliability, and performance because you have, you know, 4 kids streaming 720p videos and you don't have crazy fast internet, putting this device on your network will positively slow your network down and could cause issues just because of being on your network.
Right.
Security-wise speaking, if the device itself gets compromised, which we don't even know what kind of software is on the device. If the device itself is compromisable, it makes it even tenfold more dangerous is what I'll say. But we don't know because as from what I believe he said, if the company responds, I will post a follow-up video. I do not believe we've seen a follow-up video where the company answered any of his questions. So, I mean, again, if you're like a single bachelor or with like one other person in the house, small network with like Google Fiber speeds, and you trust your network and you trust this device, you trust this company because they've been around a little while. Yeah, they have a little bit of a name brand to protect.
Right.
Then it might be an awesome device. I'll say that. It might be an awesome device. If somebody brings this thing in my house, I'm smacking it out of their hands. You know, that's the way I would say I would be.
You know what, though? Chris, who owns the YouTube channel? He does post a question at the end of the show, and he says, "You know, as a network security professional, how would you protect yourself from something like this on your network? So, if someone were to bring this into your network, what do you do? I mean, you can obviously use port security to shut down certain ports and stuff like that, but other than that, I mean, once he said that, to light bulbs went off in my head. I'm like, this makes it a very simple to use exploit tool, and you really have to have very little to no network experience to wreak havoc on a whole town network or any kind of public network.
Yeah, Ed, there are in intrusion detection appliances that will specifically detect ARP spoofing happening on your network. Because one of the things when you do ARP spoofing is it shows duplicate IP addresses. So if your router has an internal address of 192.168.1.1, it will then be able to communicate and see, why is there two of those IP addresses on this network?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But to actually shut the thing down would require, I would guess, truly enterprise-grade hardware. And this is where I'm completely incompetent on this topic. I don't know.
Well, I got to be honest with you. I've seen a few hotel setups, and not many of them have enterprise-grade hardware. You'd be surprised what's running.
Flying rich. You're in hotels. This might be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, but usually they segment the Wi-Fi. You know, it's not like a Class B or a Class C. They really segment it down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe you got to go to a lower class hotel next time.
Yeah, severe mom and pop. Now, I did a little surfing while you guys were talking, and there's you can download an app called Overlook Thing, and it's a Debian package.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's the code, and it runs on your Pi.
It honestly wouldn't shock me, because Thing has been on Android for a while. I'm going to guess one of two things. It's either
I'm going to drop
somebody
the link.
Is emulating it. It looks like Thing.io. Well, you can go to Thing.io, and it says you can download Thing free IP scanner for desktops, Linux, Windows, Mac, and OS X. So it might be that. Not sure. Well, and if they support Debian, which they do have Deb packages, there's no reason why they can't offer it in the Debian default repo.
The Raspberry Pi Deb is the file that I thought it was, yeah. So there, you can download their tool, their IP scanner tool.
Gotcha. Yeah, and you're going to overlookstuff.com. So this doesn't, no, this looks like a different company, I believe.
Yeah, it's Overlook is the name of the company.
Yeah, Domotz, D-O-M-O-T-Z, Domotz? I don't know, something like that. So it's the same, it looks like the same type of basic functionality, is what I'm going to guess. Interesting. I would say I would feel better having, just like Rich has said in the past, I would feel better having root on the box that is running these kind of tools. Much better, I will say. Okay, well, we'll have to make sure this is in the notes as well. Because, you know, that's the reason we have notes. The only thing I really wanted to talk about real quick, guys, is I lost the bet. I lost the pool. You both beat me fair and square. I said that the ROC 64 wouldn't be shipped until, like, October 12th, I believe I said. And instead, I got my 4 gig version of the ROC 64 board here. Very simplistic packaging is what I'm going to say. Just came in a bag, I believe, in a see-through plastic container with ROC 64-4G on the front, a static bag, and the board itself. The first, I will say, obvious shortcoming with this board after getting it is they did not stress the need to buy a power supply. Because I forgot this was a barrel connector, and I did not buy a power supply. So I had a multi-tap power supply that I think is working right. And I'm going to preface this right now. I don't know if I'm doing the right amps and volts to the device, which might be causing my issue. I don't know. But it boots up, okay? The only other real shortcoming is there's a jumper here that will not allow you to boot to the SD card unless you put the jumper on, and they do not send a jumper.
Oh.
Do they make mention of it, though?
No.
Oh,
nowhere.
Man, that's not
well,
good.
And what came with the package was literally nothing. Not even
URL.
A business card.
Like,
nothing.
Find how to do stuff here.
Right, nothing. So I literally had to go my Pine 64 and pull a jumper off, try to remember, which I can't, so I took a picture where the jumper was at.
Mm.
And put the jumper on the board, put the eMMC card on there that I already had, put the SD card in, boot to it, and then I was able to install the SD card to eMMC, and then take the jumper out and run just fine. The boot, I'm going to tell you now, 4 gigs of RAM, guys. Boot speed to this thing is sick.
Mm-hmm.
It is literally sickening how fast, how snappy this is to boot. Processing is not fantastic on it. You know, when you load something heavy, you load something big, it churns away a little bit at it.
Mm-hmm.
But once stuff is loaded, the 4 gigs of RAM shows that it's there doing stuff. The only other issue I have could be power related. And this is where I don't know. And this is where I lean on other people smarter than myself. No Bluetooth Wi-Fi built on the board. That's fine. $40-something to buy 4 gigs of RAM. I'm not complaining.
Right.
Okay. But I hook up Bluetooth dongle and I can attach Bluetooth keyboards and stuff just fine. I attach 3 different Wi-Fi dongles that I know work on a lot of Pi devices, Nano Pis, Odroids, and they work just fine. I plug it up to this thing running Ubuntu or Android and no Wi-Fi working whatsoever. No light even coming on the Wi-Fi dongle. So maybe the device is barely getting enough power to run. I don't even know if this makes sense. Maybe the device is barely getting enough power to run and not getting enough power to power the dongle.
That sounds about right.
Could be. Now, have you tried your, why can't I think of it, the Pinebook power supply?
I can't find it.
No way.
I don't know where it's at. I mean, I got in the car accident. I know it was in the backpack. I distinctly remember thinking, they're going to replace this, so I need this, and wrapping it up. And I looked over the house for the last 2 days. I can't find the damn thing anywhere. So today, I broke down. I went and looked on the pine64.org website, because I want to give them more money. I can't. I can't just buy the power supply for the Rock 64. It says explicitly this will only ship with the board. So you have to put that in your cart as you buy the board, or else you can't buy the plug from them.
No way.
Because my guess is they have a limited supply. So what I did was I asked people, again, smarter than myself, here's the power supply. Here's the power supply I see on Amazon. Is this like? Is this the same thing? They quickly replied, you're an idiot. And here's the right link. Here's one on Amazon that matches perfectly. So I did literally just order that power supply. I also ordered the exact same Wi-Fi dongle that they offer, the exact same chipset, sorry, from Amazon as well, like $6, $8, something like that. So in a couple of days, I'll have their preferred Wi-Fi chipset dongle and a power adapter that matches theirs. Now, I had Ubuntu on there. First thing I loaded was Ubuntu with the i3 desktop. i3 desktop is super minimal, which means everything else should be super fast. Loaded it literally from power up to login screen, like 3 seconds. Literally. Sickening.
Wow.
I log in because it's i3, split second the desktop is loaded. Load up a terminal, do some sudo apt get update, upgrade, dist upgrade, auto clean, auto remove, the whole 9. It takes a minute. On my desktop, it takes a minute. So it's a little bit slower, I'm sure. Then I go to load graphical browsers up because that's where we do all our computing these days. I load up and there's a graphical anomaly basically happening where I see the window border, the inners of the window never fill. I let it sit hours. I tried other things, resizing, tried doing all kinds of other things. Tried to figure out how to turn off hardware acceleration pre-launching their browsers. I couldn't figure out how to do it. So then I said, okay, I'll load Ubuntu Mate. Again, loaded up, booted really fast, logged in. After logging in, it would take like 3 seconds for the desktop to load, which wasn't bad, 3 to 5 seconds. Looked fantastic, by the way, on the monitor. Supposedly can do 4K. I don't have a 4K monitor. Same thing. The browser would come up and it was like a white window. So I then knee-jerk reaction because I couldn't get the Wi-Fi dongle to work again. So then I just knee-jerk reacted and installed Android and no Wi-Fi dongle again. So my logic is hopefully the power supply fixed my Wi-Fi issues and hopefully the OS is just not mature. Now, the good thing is you can download 3 different versions of Android. You can download straight Debian, like 2 or 3 different versions. Ubuntu, I believe it's Ubuntu with Mate, Ubuntu with i3, and there was at least 2 other versions. One of them was the Libra Elect multimedia experience kind of thing. So as soon as I get the other devices in, I'm probably going to go back and load a Ubuntu again or a straight Debian and boot it up again, see if I can get a better experience. And hopefully they keep updating the OS because I've said it on the show lots of times. Having the proper hardware is literally only half the battle. Having good enough hardware in these mini computers only gets you so far. It's not the solution to all the problems. You also need people to make good software.
Right.
Good operating systems. And I will say a couple of the niceties is This has true USB 3 on it, full-size port, which is good, gigabit NIC, which is good, full-size HDMI, which is good. It does have an analog barrel connector, like 3.5. I don't know how useful that honestly is to me. Does have an infrared port again, which supposedly will work with a lot of home theater things when you run the Android. Does have a power button, does have a reset button, and the system recovery button, my guess is a Android exclusive. When your Android's acting completely up, hit that button, and it will probably revert back to like a stock-like setting. Build quality to me seems really good on this. I put it under my one webcam, looked as close as I could at all the pieces and all the solder joints from what I'm learning from other guys like that Mick who does the videos, Rich. Who finally stopped doing the stupid cheesy intro stuff.
It's funny, I haven't watched him a few weeks and just because I've been busy.
But yeah, he's still doing good stuff. The solder joints don't look exquisite on this from what I learned to him. They look decent. There's like one or two spots where I can see a slight like wiggle in what it was made. But overall, I think this is a really good quality build. $40-something. If the OS tightens up a little bit, well worth the money. If the OS tightens up a lot, extraordinary value is what I'll say.
So
and the next thing I want to do is try to have my son design a case and print it out.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
Dora, do you know if that is that a dual channel or a single channel memory?
I honestly believe it was single channel. That's a really good question. I believe it's single channel.
I wonder if that may have anything to do with your problems as well, or it could be a software issue.
I honestly do not know. And when I come to the Rock 64 page, it doesn't say explicitly if it is. Let me take a look. They have a data sheet, which of course is a PDF, because you know everyone loves PDF. I hate PDF. I'm not really seeing much in the realm of memory being mentioned really whatsoever. And this is just the chip data sheet. I don't know. And anything I say is a guess. But yeah, 4 gigs of RAM. I'll tell you now, with Android, there's no problem why this shouldn't kick the crap out of a lot of home theater boxes being sold on Alibaba, GearBest, and Amazon.
I agree.
It ain't as pretty, but 4 gigs of RAM, I'll tell you now, hard to beat. Very cool. You guys have any questions about the board or have any notes in there you wanted to bring up?
No, sorry, I'm a little lost on looking up that rock board. I think I'm good. We got a few posts here, but I don't want to run too much time.
Oh, I know what I want to say. The Pinebook I broke out the other day, and I put the Android OS on it. I was surprised that there weren't any updates on the Android OS that would go on the eMMC. It's been kind of static. And
did you run the scripts?
No, I didn't run any of the scripts.
Yeah, that's where you get your updates from. You don't get it through the interface.
Oh.
You have to go through the user share local folder, because there should be a built-in terminal emulator. You got to go to the, I believe it's USR share local script. Just do a LS and you'll see at least 10 script files. The ones that you need to run, I think, are obvious. Or the ones you can run are obvious, like update kernel, update packages. There's like 3 or 4 of them that I think you could run that could possibly give you updates.
Okay.
I explicitly looked for how you would get updates in there. It wasn't clear, so my logic is you're not going to be able to go to home settings about system update.
Oh, because I was hunting around more looking on GitHub to see if there were any OS updates available.
Right. Yeah, hopefully they churn some more updates out. I will say right now, I'll give them an excuse and say, well, right now they're busy slammed worrying about trying to get hardware out the door.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully they get a little bit better at offering these software updates. Because I said it once, I'll say it again. I got no problem giving them money. I think they have a really good start. I think they have a really good hardware product. They just need to make sure that they also work on the software side as well.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm really excited about what they're producing. And if in a year, I'm just hoping that this Rock 64 is just crazy good and a year later they have, you know, a Pinebook Rock 64, that'd be amazing.
Oh, yeah, with 4 gigs of RAM, you betcha. Yeah, I'd happily pay money. And I had, I'm so confused, guys. I'd say this is the last thing I'll talk about. I'm so confused. I had to convince the insurance company of the guy that rear-ended me that, yes, I have a laptop, and yes, it was $89.
What?
They didn't believe me. I said, look, you have a computer. I said, look, if you can't do it on your computer, I don't care. Pull up your phone, type in PINE64, hit enter. You'll see one of the first links there to be pine64.org. Click there. Click on store. Go to the store. Go down. And then you'll see the Pine Book. If you look at the picture I sent you, it clearly says Pine Book on there. Take a look at that. Okay, now click that. Now look at all the options kind of there. And now look, $100 or like $89 for the one, $99 for the other. So I'm not telling you guys I have a $1,000 Ultrabook. Just $100. Just give me my $100. I don't want to lie to you guys. Just give me my $100. And I literally have to, you know, argue with them about it. And no, I haven't got my money yet.
Oh, no. The old trick, this was in New York, is you take a small claim suit and they all of a sudden get the money quick because they have a deadline.
Right.
And they don't want to show up in court because they have to bring their attorney.
Trust me, the wife is getting a little sick and tired, so I'll let her be the person who draws out the hammer. I'm too tired. Yeah, Rich said I'm losing weight. I was diagnosed pre-diabetic kind of thing, so no sugars, no carbs in my diet. I'm exhausted. I'm always just ready to fall out. And you want to hear something shocking? I don't think I told either of you guys. Friday night, went to bed. Saturday, I went to bed like midnight, 1 a.m., whatever. Saturday morning, I wake up. The wife isn't here, and she has the kids gone with her. So I wake up, and the house is peacefully quiet. Peaceful quiet. I'm thinking, it's too quiet in here. What's going on? Where did they go?
Yeah.
And I look over at the clock. It was 5 in the afternoon.
No way.
She let you sleep till 5?
She wasn't here. She left. She went over her mother-in-law's to take the kids over there to play with the cousins kind of thing. So I literally slept for like 14, 15 hours.
Oh, 16 man.
Hours, whatever.
That's crashing.
Well,
I don't know that I'm capable of that, but if it's dark enough, I might be.
I'm capable of that once a week, is what I'll say. And that's what I told my doctor. And they said, well, I think you're a perfect candidate for a sleep study. I said, what are you talking about? I ain't got a problem going to sleep. It isn't like, I don't, no, I have, no, no, it's good sleep. I like sleep. So he sent me to a sleep study. So now I got to wait for the results. And our other co-host is away because he's having a sleep study as well. So apparently this is the time of year for sleep studies.
Well, also, I am absolutely certain I have sleep apnea. But I know if I lose weight, it goes away. The only problem is I'm no good at losing weight.
Well, you could be like me. I honestly swear, Rich, I'm not eating any less food. I'm just eating close to zero sugars and sub 100 carbs a day. I'm shooting for like 40, 50 carbs a day.
Oh, man, I used to do Atkins. I'd be like 10, 20 grams of carbs a day.
Yeah, it ain't easy. Really quick, Rich, if people want to catch up with your goings-ons, where do they go?
FlyingRich.com, the world's best website.
Most exclusive one as well. Brian, if people want to hook up with you, what and not Tinder, but where should people go to communicate with you?
no hooking up over here. No, come and check me out over at Google Plus. I'm always hanging out on Google Plus, and they can always send emails directly to Podnuts.
How do we find Brian on Google Plus?
So, you know, that's a good question. You probably can look at my name, Brian Thomas, or you can go to Ask the Cable Guy.
Well, yes, or if you just go to the Mini PC Show community, you will only see, I believe, one Brian Thomas in there.
That's right. And I just posted, so come check it out.
There you go. I want to thank everyone for their support. Thank everyone for downloading. If you can support us, you can just go to podnuts.com, scroll down, and you should see 2 PayPal buttons. If you want to use alternate means of donations, you can click on the Support Podnuts tab by the very top, and you can go see our Patreons we have running. I'll say this. 2 people this week sent me an email telling me I should have a Patreon. I'll start a Patreon. And I lastly will say, if you want to learn about moving away from OS X, or from Windows, just shoot me an email. I will send you for free a copy of a book from a good friend over at Going Linux, goinglinux.com. Larry Bushy has a book out on Ubuntu Mate, a guide for computer users upgrading from Windows or OS X. And I encourage everyone to go to goinglinux.com. Check out that podcast. If you like it, send them an email. Tell them they're doing a good job and tell them that I sent you over there. We need to support each other. Support those who support you. Larry has supported me many times in the past. So this is the least I could do. This is not a paid advertisement. This is an advertisement of love. So with that, I will talk to everyone again in about a week.
My name is Jeff Halish. I'm the host of Podnuts Daily, where we interview real people who are working in the computer repair field. I would like to invite you to check out the shows to learn what other computer repair techs are doing. If you would like to be a guest on the show, then contact me at guest@podnuts.com. Podnuts Daily, where it's fun to talk tech.